Blog Talk Radio.
How did you lose them? The treatment for my spine affects my DNA. Sacrificed your power so you could walk.
I sacrificed my power so that I could sleep. What do you know about it?
I've lost my fair share.
Huh. Dry your eyes, Eric. It doesn't justify what you've done.
You've no idea what I've done.
I know that you took the things that mean the most to me.
Well, maybe you should have fought harder for them.
If you want to fight, Eric,
I
will
down.
Give you a fight!
Let him come.
You abandoned me! You took her away, and you abandoned me!
Angel. Azazel. Emma. Banshee.
Mutant brothers and sisters, all dead!
Countless others! Experimented on! Butchered!
Eric!
Where were you, Charles? We were supposed to protect them! Where were you when your own people needed you? Hiding! You and Hank, pretending to be something you're not!
Eric!
You abandoned us all.
Scales.
You're now listening to 13 Revolution Radio.
Turn me off. Cover your ears. Because you don't want to hear this kind of truth.
You ain't got time to be playing around. You got to learn all you possibly can to make it in this world.
We're exposing this thing today.
It's not the money that buys you a future. It's your skills that buy you a future.
And we ain't got no time to fool around with people who are just playing at this.
And now, here's your host, Minister Dawood Mohammed.
Something to tell our revolutionary children. You know what I'm saying?
Here we go.
Word. Once upon a time, not long ago, the black woman was a goddess, wasn't called a hoe.
Nope.
The black man God just us stood. Before the caveman came, destroyed the hood. There was a little devil that was inbred with another little devil. This is what he said. Me and you tonight, we gonna take some land.
What?
Kill some black folks and create the Klan.
Okay.
They get the job, murder was a breed.
Uh-huh.
Noose around the neck, bio war for disease. They killed another and another, attacked a sister and a brother. Sent a COINTELPRO, disrupt us undercover. Crackers raped Africa, but called us savage.
What?
I wish my ancestors had plenty automatic.
Yeah.
Put us on the ships, branded us on our back.
Uh-huh.
Raped a little boy, so we grow up a fag.
Yeah.
Nat Turner stood up, said, God is with me. Axe cocked back at the devil's headpiece.
Yeah.
Cracker got scared.
Yeah.
He saw a two-figure. Gotta make him Christian, keep control of these niggas. White trash mobs chased us up the block. They would hang us, shoot us, castrate.
And Jordan kept the cop.
Strange fruit hanging from the trees. Cracker slipped up. He ain't see the Desolines coming to fix us. Black power heroes, gonna heal the nation. Crackers can't fathom war that they facing. Zulu drum playing, take a step with your left. Running top speed, bring the devil his death. Knock the old cracker down, made sure we killed him. Ran up in his home, finish off his children. Ran up the stairs, kicked down the back door. Hiding on the floor there, guess what we saw? A white boy in black face, rapping body dope. Now he's staring down the nozzle, got the beam at his throat. Brother said, save your bullets, you don't need a gun. Talk to him for information, kill him when we done. Went outside, there was cops all over. So we hollered at the blood, they brought supernova. Headed to the precinct, must defeat the beast. Spray him, lay him down, and you bury him deep.
beat, yeah. Escaped alive, left a cop's jaw shattered. When my people stand up, you see the devil scatter. Make sure you get the Zionists out your head. Told a cracker, back off, for all y'all dead. Yeah. Deep in their hearts, brothers know they ain't wrong, so they ain't let nobody go and started killing them all. So Uncle Tom can't believe it, he seems astounded. Before long, all of them got surrounded. They got a choice, freedom or purgatory. Yes, this the way we telling our stories. My name Dito Green on the black man team. Shot one Tom so all the rest could see. Look, this is so funny, we encourage you to laugh. Yes. Look at your master laying on his ass. We will regain our minds of the past. I'm here to bring you strength while we walking on the path. Peace.
Salaam alaikum. In the name of Allah, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, I bear witness there's no God but Allah. I bear witness that the most honorable Muhammad is his messenger. I myself can never thank Allah enough for my teacher, the most honorable Minsulin with X. Brothers and sisters, I greet you once again with the green words, peace of Assalamu alaikum. It is my pleasure, my humble honor, to be on these esteemed airways once again to continue to bring the message of revolution, reconstruction, and renaissance, and attempt to give a good clear picture of the future for the black movement in America and the world at large. And it is my pleasure and honor to continue to bring you brothers and sisters who I think facilitate that future, because the black movement as we know it broad encompasses many different elements. You know, you have your militant element, you have your scientific element, you have your scholarly element, you have many different elements of it. And if you're constantly hearing the same message over and over and over again, you may kind of get disenchanted or bored. So 13th Revolution, the reason why we exist is we exist to bring all of these elements together in a cohesive unit without the arguing, the bickering, the banging that you are used to in the modern time, because we realize that we're not going to get nowhere like that. So we try to bring as many people as we can together under the umbrella of revolution, reconstruction, renaissance, and nation building. Because so many of us who have soldiered on these streets, you know, in the lecture halls and mosque temples and buildings and things like that, we realize that the final answer to what we have been working for so many years is the creation of a black nation state. But what we do not agree on, I guess a lot of times, is how is this to come about? My brothers and sisters from the Black African Infrastructure Organization, we stress land infrastructure nationhood. Some other people may stress simply repatriation and other things like that. We understand today that all of the ideas actually work for the good of what we're trying to do, but the problem, again, is bringing everybody together. And so in my judgment, one of the greatest tasks of us as a people beginning to rebuild high black society is affecting the mental architecture of the children. I don't know if you know what I mean by mental architecture, but when I say mental architecture, I'm talking about the very structure of our children's thoughts. I'm talking about the very process, the foundation, because we are, you know, many of us who are older, you're in your 30s, you're in your 40s, you may have joined the movement when you were 20, or 30 or whatever, a lot of damage was done by the time you got to your 20s. And you have to close your eyes really tight to see Africa in a positive light, regardless to what you have may have been taught. You have to close your eyes tight and concentrate and see black people in a positive light, regardless of what you have been taught. And you have to admit that it takes a little while after you become conscious to condition yourself to see us as a people, our homeland, our nation, our people, in a positive light, because you've been taught so much garbage about us when you were younger that it takes a while before it's an unconscious effort and you see us as a people that is beautiful. But even then, and sometimes in a time of stress or a time of pressure, some of us may revert to the old thinking and be like, oh, black people ain't nothing, and want to give up. And so therefore, to me, if you start early, if you start in the infancy and teach your child the beauty of being black, the beauty of our people, and that we're not a soft people, that we can fight back, that we can resist, that we can give somebody, you know, a reason to recognize us and respect us, I think that that in and of itself is one of the most revolutionary acts that you could use to build a nation. And in that, I, by God's grace, have ran into a sister on Facebook whose work and teaching I really, really, really respect and have been following for a long time. I've purchased one of her books and plan to purchase others. And my sister is no friend, I mean, no stranger to controversy. She is also a fellow Muslim sister that came into the same construct of the NOI that I did. And so I guess at this particular time, there needs to be no more introduction. It is my pleasure and my humble honor to bring in our good sister, Sister Angela Freeman. Sister, are you there?
I am. How are you?
I'm fine, Sister. Assalamu alaikum. How are you?
Well, alaikum salam. I'm just fine. Thank you for inviting me today. I definitely appreciate the invitation to come and speak to your audience.
Oh, no problem at all. No problem at all. It's a long time coming. We kept rescheduling it and canceling it, so I just wanted to be a man of my word and make sure that it happened. And plus, I wanted to see it happen. So, you know, it is what it is, and all the stars aligned, and we're here today. So, now, I guess we can dive right into it. It says here, I guess the first question I would like to ask you is this. Can you tell the people your background and how you came to have the revolutionary mentality that you have?
As far as background, I mean, I was raised pretty much like everybody else, really not knowing much about Africans or especially not African history before enslavement. And so I don't know if I really consider myself a revolutionary. I just think that I've accepted truth, and whatever comes along with it comes along with it. For some people, some of my views can be kind of extreme. But I just, you know, credit it to the fact that if I see truth, you have to accept it and move on from there.
I got you. I got you. Well, that's fantastic. I kind of consider you to be, simply because you are working for change in the way our children think. But that's, I mean, that it is what it is. I just think that your way of trying to change that mentality, to me, that's a revolt. Can we agree on that?
Oh, we can definitely agree on that.
Okay. All right. So let me ask you this, and this is a question I have to ask because it's just, you know, we all come from a different walk of life, but we all come to the same conclusion, I guess. What are some of your earliest dealings with white folks that may have shaped your understanding and your way of writing and your way of seeing things?
Well, I think that my earliest dealings with white people, I mean, it was from the very beginning. I have a lot of white people in my family. Most of my neighborhoods were integrated, both black and white. So I got to see them up close and personal from a very, very early age, but I didn't really realize what I was witnessing. I was kind of, I guess I would call myself the pet Negro of the group. White people tended to love me because I was well-behaved and I was obedient. I did what I was told. I didn't ask a lot of questions. And, you know, that's the kind of personality that they like. I didn't realize until later that, you know, that was not a good thing. And that these people who smiled in your face were not necessarily your friends. It took a while to figure that out. I didn't realize it until I was older and looked back on my childhood and said, wow, those were some very wicked individuals.
Right.
But, yeah, so from a very early age I was dealing with them. It just took a while to put it into perspective.
Got you. If you're just turning in, we are having an interview with our good sister, Sister Angela Freeman, also known as Lady Shabazz, and we are dealing with her career and where she's going with it. So please call in if you have any questions, and we'll get to you at the end. So I guess the next question I would have to ask you is, I mentioned in the beginning that you're a fellow sister from the NOI, and you carry the name Shabazz. You don't have to, but would you care to talk about that experience and how it helped shape your mentality?
Sure. I'd say, well, actually, even before I got into the Nation of Islam, I was kind of primed for it. I have a brother who is about 9 years older than me, and at one time, I don't know, maybe I was about 10 or so, he sat me down and showed me roots and said, you know, look at what they've done to us. And that
right.
was mind-blowing. I'd heard of enslavement, but I really didn't know much about it. And even though roots was mild, in my young mild, that was just unfathomable. So mm-hmm. later on, I saw like the Malcolm X movie, and I saw the sisters there, and they were so refined and so elegant, intelligent. I said, I want to be like one of those people. Never really thought I would. And I was just searching for truth, I think. And I got to the point where, you know, I went to church because I had to, but I never really believed in Christianity. But one day I just sat down and I read Revelation, and it started talking about, you know, Satan and being disguised, and you would never know who this person was. And I sat there and I tried to think about it. You know, could it be the Pope? Could it be the president? Who could this person be? I never realized that it was an entire race of people. Mm-hmm. And so when I came into the nation, I was maybe 16 years old, and I read Message to the Black Man, and mm-hmm. it just all clicked. It all made sense, and why we couldn't see these people for who they are. It's definitely the best disguised secret in the world. It's right in front of our faces, but we can't see it.
Right. Right. Agreed. At 16 years old, that's a blessing. I came in when I was 19, almost 20. I sure wish it would have been better for me to come in that early, but either way, things happen for a reason. So, all right, so I am familiar to some degree with your husband on Facebook, and I guess we always talk about our better half or whatever, and you guys have a very good relationship. You kid around with each other. At what point did you meet your husband, and did he help shape your outlook that you have today and that you're right with?
Definitely. I met him about a little over nine years ago. And at that point, you know, I believed that the white man was the devil, but I was still kind of lukewarm with it. I still thought it was, quote unquote, some cool white people out there. Like,
right.
You know, just one or two. We'll make an exception for this cracker right here. It'll be all right. But after dealing with him and seeing what he had to go through on a day-to-day basis, it just made it so much more real to me. And I started becoming angry seeing what he had to go through as a black man that I had kind of been protected from to a large extent. And it really made it sink in that, no, the white man is the devil. And I really began having a very, very strong dislike for white people. And so I definitely have to say that he was instrumental in that. Also, because I started out actually not with children's books, but focusing more on relationships, going through the experience of being a newlywed and all that entails after the honeymoon phase is over, definitely gave me some expertise to help me in that line of work as well.
Now, off script, I would like to ask you this. Were you influenced by any of the books by Sister Shahrazad Ali?
Oh, certainly. I actually know Shahrazad personally.
Wow.
And yeah.
You know all the cool people.
She lived right down the street from some of my family. She lived right down the street from some of my family. So, and I met her like the first time back in maybe 2000. I came down and saw her. But I remember seeing her on Donahue when I was a teenager. And I read probably in the early 2000s The Black Man's Guide to Understanding the Black Woman. And I saw that there was a lot of truth in that book. It made me really take a look at myself. And I would have to say that it probably did encourage me to start writing a little bit because it left me with a lot of questions. Once I recognized the problem, I started looking at what is the solution? Because if I suffer from some of the things in this book, how do I fix it? How do I improve myself? And that kind of led me to do some of the things that I've done.
Right. Fantastic. Okay, so me and you, we both, and we found out by accident, we both know a sister named Fasani, or knew, I should say. You know, may Allah be pleased with her. And you knew her more than I did because you basically lived in the same state that she lived in. Can you please tell us about her and how she may have shaped your view?
Sure. I would say I didn't know Fasani as well as I wanted to, but she definitely did impact my life. We grew up, you know, not very far from each other, about an hour away, same climate, same extremely racist region of the country. And by the time I met her, I had actually moved to another state, but we still had that in common. And when I met her, I was going through a period of real frustration, seeing that, you know, when I started in the nation probably around 1995. And I met her, I don't know, maybe 10, 12 years later, started talking to her. It seemed like we had gotten worse. And I was very disappointed about that and wondering, you know, is it even worth it? Should I just give it up and be a happy little housewife and just be like, forget it, because we're not getting anywhere? And she really motivated me to keep going and keep pushing. So I always am grateful to her for that.
Right, right. I met Fasani by accident. When I first came on Blog Talk, I was just surfing around looking for a show to listen to, and I had heard her on the God Zulu show. And basically what attracted me to the show is that it was basically, it seemed like it was going to be an expose of something. It says, Fasani puts herself on blast. And I was like, oh, well, I wonder who they're talking about. And, man, when I heard that sister's voice, I said, who in the world is that? I mean, it was so much power and so much authority. I had basically had sent them a message, and I was like, listen, I just wanted to have permission to see if the sister will come on my show. And at that particular time, I was taking a law license class, so she had called me back, and I was actually out of town in a hotel. And we had a very long, very good conversation, and we became friends. And that sister, man, you know, the thing about mm-hmm. it is that there's so much division in the conscious community where people would say, well, you're a Muslim, I'm not going to deal with you, and you know, or you're Afrocentric, I'm not going to deal with you. But she never, like, ever held that, you know what I'm saying? She just basically was like, look, you're a good brother, and I'm going to come on your show, and I'm going to deliver. And she was such a rising star, so when I found out that she passed away, I was devastated for two reasons. A, because I would never hear Fasani again or have, you know, the opportunity to meet her. But B, because it's like I found out a year later, you know what I mean? So I don't
yeah.
know. It just really bothered me because I it's like that the conscious community does not realize what a giant of a woman that they lost, you know. But either way,
that's
it's
true.
Like, it's you basically that put me onto that because I didn't even know. And one day you was telling me, you know, I mean, you was posting something about her, and I was like, hey, what happened to her? And then you told me, and I was like, wow. So either way, I guess the
yeah.
last question before we think, oh, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, during the end, she kind of was keeping to herself, so a lot of people were taken by surprise. But you're 100% right. When I first heard her, I was like, I didn't know I could talk like that. I was like, whoa, you can say that? You know, because I was kind of, at that point, kind of shy and introverted, very soft-spoken, and it was some things I just didn't know I could say. She, like, showed me, look, you can keep it all the way real and don't even worry about it. Don't apologize. Just, you know, it is what it is, whatever. So I definitely agree
right.
with you. It was a big loss.
I think she brought a lot out of all of us. She really did, and it's just a blessing. But so I guess last thing I want to ask you is you're on War on Horizon, and I have heard a couple of your shows and really enjoyed them. And you have a radio show. I don't know if you still do it, but I know that it had a nice following. And the thing about it is that everybody wants to do radio, but radio is not for everybody. You know, in other mm-hmm. words, people will be hearing Blog Talk, and they'd be like, I think I could do that. And then they get on here, and they realize that it's a grind, and it's a challenge to keep new content going and stuff like that. But you seem to have, you know, you seem to have a good groove when you do it. How did you know that, you know, radio was for you, and how did you basically get to where you are at with it?
Well, right now, actually, I'm not doing programs. I took a little time off. I do hope to get back to it this year, though, definitely, because I enjoyed doing it. I'll say I had no clue that radio was for me. I had no intention of doing it at all. One day I called into the Irritated Genius show. I was a huge fan of his. I called in every week. And
mm-hmm.
at the end of the program, he was just like, by the way, I'm going to call you in a minute because I want you to do a program. And, like, put me on the spot. I was like, what? You don't want me to do a program? What are you talking about? And that's really how it started. I wasn't going to do it. I was going to chicken out, but my husband was like, nope, it's an opportunity. Go ahead, do it. You'll be fine. Because, as I said, I was very kind of introverted. I really didn't like to talk that much. But I thank him definitely for giving me that push, because if it was up to me, I would not have ever done it. And a lot of doors that opened to me probably would have never opened.
Hmm. Speaking of which, my first encounter with Irritated Genie was actually through Fasani.
Mm-hmm.
Because Fasani was on a gentleman's show, which is a good brother, God Zulu. And then somehow Fasani had went, had got her own solo show. So she started having him on once and twice and three times. And I was like, who is this dude? I never heard this dude before. And I started listening. So she is the one that actually put me on because she was a big fan of his also. And but you actually know this dude in person, so that's a yet another cool dude that you know. So
definitely. And that was another thing that happened by accident. I'm telling you, sometimes the stars just line up for things to happen. I happened to, I was kind of frustrated with the way things were going, and I was saying, you know, I wish that the NOI was doing more, and I was watching YouTube, and one of his videos popped up, and I was just blown away. I said, you know, if I was in D.C., I would help that brother. But I didn't think anything of it because I didn't live anywhere near D.C. I just went up, about my business, did whatever, and I would have never guessed in a million years that we would be aligned in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, if something's meant to be, it will definitely happen.
Got you. Yeah. I mean, well, thank God he did because it's definitely a good show and it's something that the people enjoy. All right, we're going to take a break real quick and then we're going to come back and we'll get into your written work, if that's okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go. Let's see.
Concern it. Why don't you listen and learn? That once was strong,
but you too
divided. Even that's turned wrong. Hey, it's cool to look bummy and be a dumb dummy and disrespect your mommy.
Have you forgotten?
Who put you on this earth, huh?
Who put you all proud?
And who loves you since your birth? Reward is a brainwashed kid going wild. Young little girls already have a child.
Bad company.
Hey, now you've been framed.
Your parents are hurted.
Hurted and ashamed.
For ruining yourself.
And your mommy can't cope. Hey, little kids, don't follow these dopes.
As a rule from a non-fool.
Your life don't drool. Don't be a fool like those that don't go to school.
Get ahead
and accomplish things. You'll see the wonder and the joy life brings.
Don't admire these.
Hey, they don't admire you. Their time's limited, hard rock too. So listen, be strong, scream whoopee-doo. Go for yours, cause dreams come true.
And you'll make your mommy
so proud of you too.
And this is the message
that the ruler,
you know,
Rick threw,
you know,
and it's true.
You know what?
All right, and we're back. And if you're just tuning in, this is my dear sister, Angela Freeman, author of many children's books, including Superhero Sankofa Superheroes, Lessons for Watoto, Bomani Stand, and the list goes on and on and on and on. Check her out, and she's going to give her information in a minute. But we're going to get into the writing part of your career. So I guess the first question I want to ask you is, at what point did you decide to become an author? And we kind of cheated this one because we alluded to it during the Shahrazad Ali discussion, but at what point did you really decide?
Was not something that I necessarily planned. I started off writing articles for a Muslim newspaper, and they were usually a little bit controversial, pretty popular. But I really had no plans of doing anything other than that. Later on, I started a blog that was based on homemaking, relationships, things like that, and people started telling me, you know, why don't you put all of this into a book? There's no books for black women that give good information that directly relates to us, that's not mainstream, and something that's real that we can use, that's common sense stuff that we can put into practice today to improve our relationships. So I called Irritated Genie, and I'm like, oh, yo, you got a book. How hard is it to get a book out? I thought it was going to be some big process that was completely unobtainable. And, you know, he said, you know, go on and write it, send it to me. I'll let you know if it's any good, and we'll go on and help you put it out, give you any information you need. So I wrote it. I sat down, and actually I took about a week and a half Spent morning, noon, and night writing until I got the first draft of God's Gift done. Everybody loved it, and that's how I became an author, really. It's not something, as I said, that I thought beforehand. I just didn't think that, I guess it was a process recognizing that I had a voice with something valuable to say. And once I wrote God's Gift, there was no turning back.
Right. And from what I understand, your first book was God's Gift. So can you please tell our audience, like give them a brief synopsis on that, and basically what prompted you to write the book?
Sure. God's Gift is a book not only about relationships, but about womanhood in general. It's called God's Gift, How to Be a Good Black Woman to a Strong Black Man. What prompted that is because I was out of the newlywed phase by the time I had written that book. And, you know, after the newlywed phase, you settle in, you get to know the person, and you start getting a little friction here and there, and you're wondering, you know, how can I improve this to keep everything in balance, keep it all correct. So I started reading different books and looking for advice, and some of it was good, but it was for Europeans, and other stuff, you know, was complete trash. I knew it wouldn't work. So I said, you know what, I'm going to write the book that I would want to read. I'm going to give myself advice I know works. And that's basically how God's Gift came to be. As I said, I'd read Charizard's book, so I was already doing a lot of introspection as far as, you know, what is wrong with me? What am I doing wrong? I knew that. The question was, how do I stop? How do I improve it? And how do I make my relationship last and be get better every year instead of getting worse and having more friction? And that's really what God's Gift is all about.
Got you. And then from there, well, I thought that your first one was Hankova Superheroes, but Superheroes. But what exactly was your first book, and what made you start writing children's books?
Well, God's Gift had come out, and I had already started working on another book. It was called Conscious Entertaining, and that was kind of not just MGT style, but for women who entertain at home. You know, once we get consciousness, we act like we can't do anything. We're just isolated and, you know, act like a bunch of old people just sitting up in the home. So I said, well, let's do a book talking about entertainment ideas for people who are conscious. Well, while I was waiting on that to be edited and all of that, I found out, again, my brother irritated Jeannie was expecting a baby. And it was kind of a joke. I put together this ABC book, and I was like, you know, all these ABC books on the market are just dumb and stupid. They're not teaching anything. What would happen if I did an ABC book my way?
Right, right.
So I did it as a joke, and I sent him the file. I was like, check this out. This is my ABC book. And he was like, yo, this is dope. You got to put it out. And that's how the Conscious Book of ABCs came out. D, and it's D is for devil, and it's got a picture of a little cracker, Caucasian child.
Right.
For D is for devil. And it says the white man is the devil. So people always get a kick out of that when they see it. You know, I talk about Zionism and being like straight pride, all that kind of stuff in the book. So if you're reading that book to your child every day from the time they're small, they'll remember that. They actually memorize that, and they know these concepts already by the time you're ready to put them in daycare.
Right, right. And see, that this is what I'm talking about, sis. This is exactly what I'm talking about. When a child reads your book in opposed to reading Jack and Jill and Dick and Jane and stuff like that, A for Africa, I mean, that is huge. Just having that is huge. Because like I said in my opening, we were taught to look at Africa in a negative light. We were taught to look at black people, and the darker you are, the more negative we were taught to look. So if you're starting children off at a young age with these kind of books, and they give you pride for the country that you come from, and pride for your skin color, stuff like that, to me it just builds a different level of confidence, and you don't have to be awkward in society. So this is why I say that I think your work is revolutionary, because, you know, if you go into the average bookstore, you're not going to see any books like this, and this is not what they want us to have, you know. So for me, oh, I'm sorry, was there anything?
Oh, no, I was just saying, you know, I agree wholeheartedly. I don't always see myself as revolutionary, but I don't argue when people say it, because it definitely is different.
I got you.
It's different. I'll give you that.
Okay. Yeah, because it's like, listen, I was at a black comic book convention last week, and it was in New York City. It was marvelous. And the, one of the things they had there is they had a bunch of children's books there also. So I got their black children's books that they had because I'm just trying to build a library for my children. I got five, you know what I'm saying, two young ones and three older ones. And my three older ones, they came up in the Nation of Islam construct, so they are familiar with Born and Raised Off, Message to a Black Man, Our Savior Has Arrived, and Daddy Teaching pretty much, you know what I'm saying. The younger ones that we have, they will probably grow up on Daddy Teaching also in the Messenger's books. But I want them to have something because, you know, children spend a lot of time watching cartoons in the morning and stuff like that. And the cartoons either are pushing integration, you know, that they're also pushing homosexuality and stuff like that. So if you're making books that's contrary to that, to me, that's revolution without a doubt. And it's reshaping, you know, children's mental architecture, whether you realize it or not, because well, we'll get into some of the other stuff later, the opposition that you face, but good, bad, or indifferent, you are definitely changing the paradigm. So, well, I just want to ask you this question, because this is a brother that I friended on Facebook, and I've seen some of his work and some of his views also. You enlisted the brother, Khalid Dessalim, to draw some of your children's books. How has it been working with him, and why did you choose him? Because, see, the people don't understand who are listening to my show that don't know you, they don't understand how funny you are. So you're acting very, you know what I'm saying, you're acting very professional right now, but they don't know how funny you are. And I know that a lot of times on Facebook you talk about firing your illustrators and stuff like that. So tell us how it is. You know, I see that all the time, and I just be laughing. She's like, if I don't have to fire another illustrator. So tell us how it is working with this good brother, because he's the one that wrote or the illustrations for Sankofa Superheroes and some of your other books. How is it working with him, and what made you work with him?
Actually, Khalid Dessalim is a good brother. He's hilarious. He had contacted me on Facebook a while ago, telling me that he liked my program. And just, you know, bouncing ideas off my head. And I didn't think much of it. A lot of people don't know he's really a talented writer as well. So he sent me a story that he did. I was like, wow, that's awesome. And then he was like, yeah, well, I'm an illustrator too. And I'm like, yeah, okay, well, so am I. If you were an illustrator, so am I.
Right.
But in the meantime, I had gone, as you said, to a comic book expo in Detroit. It's a black comic expo. And while I was there, I picked up a comic book that's supposed to be for children. And the first page, it had the F word on it. It was like somebody got knocked the F out. And I was like, whoa, this is for children. This is what we're teaching our children now. And it just dawned on me how degenerate it was. So, you know, Khalid had already kind of mentioned maybe doing a children's book. And I was like, I ain't doing any more children's books. But after seeing that, I said, well, maybe we should. So he did do the illustrations for Sankofa 1 and 2. And it was cool working with him because it was a learning experience. At that point, there was no books on the market like that at all. And my idea was, you know, Black History Month is so boring. I hated Black History Month in school because we're only taught that we're passive slaves. Yeah, you know, like passive slaves, happy slaves, Martin Luther King, and things line up every year. So I said, what if we take, you know, some of our very militant heroes and, like, actually turn them into superheroes and give them each a superpower that'll be a vocabulary word that children can aspire to. And we started working on it, and at first we did kind of pretty mild images. We did Garvey, we did Baba and Wally Mubarudi, his wife Yaa Baroudi. And then, I don't know what happened, but the illustrations just started getting wilder and wilder, and Nat Turner hacking people, and crackers, like dead crackers spread out like carpet. I don't know what happened, but once it started, we couldn't stop. So a lot of that I have to thank him for, because I would give him an idea and he would just like take it and run, and I'd be like, can we do this? And he's like, yeah, we're doing it now. And I was like, okay. Or sometimes he'd say, you know, do you really want to do that? And I'd be like, yeah, put some old dead crackers in it. So it was like Pinky in the Brain working on that book, but I don't think that there's ever going to be another one like it. It's classic.
I hear you. So now, tell us about, because you have Nalaja Dolls, and I think that that's one of the most requested ones, if I'm not sure.
And
Lessons for Watoto. Tell us, what were you looking to accomplish? Where were you looking to go with these particular books?
Well, Lessons for the Watoto came out, actually released that about the same time I released Sankofa Super Heroes. And while I was waiting on Kyla to finish up those illustrations, I just started looking at African proverbs, and I saw how deep they were and how, you know, letting children get that African philosophy and teaching them morals and values, that it could be really important. So I just did one book, and I was like, it was really cool. The more I read it, the more I liked it. And that turned into part two and part three. So I like did, and it's basically just a picture book with African proverbs, and you can teach your children. So, I mean, that's really good for anybody. That's not controversial. It's mild, but it's very deep. It's as deep as you let it be.
Right.
And the Elijah's Dolls came a little bit after that. I did a book on colors called Colors of Africa, which is also really good for teaching your children about Africa while they learn colors at the same time. I got the idea to do Nalaja's Dolls because of how low our self-esteem is. And I figured if we could, like, nip that in the bud as children, how much better it would be once we became adults. Because every book that I saw talking about natural hair was integrated, or it was just saying, accept your hair. I've yet to see a book, you know, besides mine that says, not accept your hair, but your hair is the best and your skin is the best. And if you try to change it, this is the damage you're doing, and you're actually lowering yourself. You're not making an improvement. That book needed to be out there, and that's why I made Elijah's Dolls.
And that's a beautiful thing, too. First off, and I have two thoughts. First off, I think that we don't know enough African proverbs. I think that that's something that we as a people, we are very careless with, because we know all of the white man's sayings, you know what I'm saying? We know all of the of his sayings, his proverbs, and his, like, we could take them off, you know. People come to America just to say these things, but nobody really knows African proverbs, and a lot of those proverbs, they're amazing. If we're, again, I go back to this, if you are trying to reach children with this, it's cutting out a lot of the mental damage that you got to deal with when you're older, because it's just like, I don't know. To me, I just think that we have to, a lot of repairing to do of not only the image of the black man in America, but the black man in Africa and Africa as a whole. There's just a lot of damage to the image that we have to repair done living here in women's North America. And if you don't start when you're younger, you know, 20, 30 years, you got so many years of, like, I guess you would say habitual damage done to the black mind regarding his people, you know, and basically his homeland. And for me, if you're starting younger, to me, it's just like, I always talk about what I call a nationalist mental architecture, which means that you are instilling people, in black people, a mental pride and a mental structure to that pride that has many levels and tiers to it. And that way it can't be broken by just one attack on it. And I just think that when you write books like this and you do something where, I mean, Colors of Africa, nobody's doing nothing like that. Nobody's doing nothing like that. And we really thank you for that particular work and for God inspiring you to do that. I guess the last part of this particular segment before we move on would be, so since those two books, you've written many other books. Would you care to just, like, basically pick them off real quick and tell us, give us, like, a brief description of them?
Sure. Okay, we'll go with one of my personal favorites, Insurrection, which basically I wrote because we're always told Lincoln Frees is not true. In Insurrection, I start with the Haitian Revolution and talk about how they became the first black country in this hemisphere, how they overthrew the French, and then how that affected us in America through Denmark Vesey, Nat Turner, Gabriel Prosser, lots of people. Basically how we freed ourselves and giving us the credit for doing what we did. We put in work and they were afraid, and that's why we got, quote unquote, freed. So that's what that one is about. A new release is called A Bibi Fahodie. That's actually based on the Coconut Revolution that took place in Papua New Guinea, where they actually revolted and they had an eco-war. They actually won by being self-sufficient. So that's the lesson in that book. We've discussed Sankofa Super Heroes, book one and two. There's another proverb book I just put out called Lessons for the Asafo, and that's pretty much the same as Lessons for the Watoto. The only difference is it talks about leadership, warfare, knowing your enemy. It's that kind of stuff. So it's Proverbs, but they're based on those lessons. Bahani
right.
Stand is another. It's another very, very popular book. It's about bullying and standing up for your community, how to be a warrior, even if your enemy is bigger than you, how to stand up to them.
I love the picture in front of that book, I must say.
I know.
I love that picture.
And it really shows, because lately, I don't know if you've noticed, but they turn bullying into like a homosexual thing. Like you can't talk, you know, saying anything about a homosexual or bullying.
Right.
Well, that's,
right.
Yeah, that's not bullying. Bullying is what we've encountered for the last 400, 500 years. That's what bullying is. So
right.
I wanted
right.
to put that into perspective. Kofense's Private Parts is a very important book. That one
oh, yes.
is part
please,
of the same.
Please talk about that.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
sorry, go ahead.
It's part of the same series as Nalaja's Dolls and Bomani Stand. And it basically empowers children to learn about child molestation, because a lot of parents either don't know how to have that conversation, or they wait until the child is almost grown to have that conversation, and it's too late.
Right.
So if you buy that book for your children and read it, the book has basically had the conversation for you in a very child-friendly way. It's told them everything they need to know to, you know, protect themselves on their end. Then as a parent, you just have to step up and do your job as well.
Right.
Let's see. There was Nalaja's Sweet Treats, and that's just talking about healthy eating, encouraging children to make better food choices. So that was a good one. And the last children's book is Omowale and the Butterfly, which is basically overcoming obstacles, not giving up, not being frustrated or thinking that you can't do it, to be able to accomplish goals on your own. And then there was one booklet that I made called Hands Off, and that is a good accompaniment for Kofense's Private Parts. It's actually for parents, and it discusses the parents' role in keeping children safe.
Hmm.
So
there you have it,
that's
ladies,
a long list.
Yes, yes, and as you can see, you are hard at work building this library for our children, and we really thank you for that, sis. Okay, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to get into the roughest part of this, because we need to talk about this opposition. This is something I've been following for a couple of years, and the black audience needs to know about it. So we're going to take like a two-minute break, and we'll be right back.
All right.
I think what you're trying to ask is, why am I so insistent upon giving out to them that blackness, that black power, that black pushing them to identify with black culture? I think that's what you're asking. It's, I have no choice over it. In the first place, to me, we are the most beautiful creatures in the whole world, black people. I mean, and I mean that in every sense, outside and inside. And to me, we have a culture that is surpassed by no other civilization, but we don't know anything about it. So again, I think I've said this before in this same interview, I think at some time before, my job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, and just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them. And I will do it by whatever means necessary.
And we're back, brothers and sisters, and we're at the home stretch. If you're just tuning in, I'm with my dear sister, Angela Freeman, author of many black children's books and author of the book God's Gift, which is a book that deals with black relationships. My sister is an author, and she does a lot of work in the community also. So let's deal with that. First, let me say that, you know, I have a great love for your work. And when I say your work, I know that you do, not only do you write these books and you sell them, but you also regularly donate your books to black schools. So please tell us about that. And some of your other, you know, philanthropic work that, you know, things that you do just off the cuff that you're just trying to help black people come up with.
Wow. Yes, I do donate a lot of books to schools. Well, I have over the past year, and I have to thank my supporters for that because I had a fundraiser, and they helped me raise the funds to be able to do that. So I definitely want to shout them out for that. It just depends. You know, I do what I see a need for, and I encourage other people to do that. And, you know, in the past I've done foster care. I've been a rape crisis counselor, rape survivor advocate. It just depends on, you know, when I see a need in the community and what I'm able to do. That's kind of how I got into writing books. You know, I saw a need and I said, you know, I could sit here and be like everybody else and just say, well, we need this and somebody should do that. Well, if I have the ability to do it, why not let it be me instead of sitting here and complaining? Let me go ahead and do that. So there's not one main thing that I can point to and say I do this or that, but if I see a need and I'm able to fill it, I just fill it.
Well, we definitely thank you for that. That's huge. I guess for now, you know, there's a, you know, from what I saw, there's a bit of opposition on the internet, you know, specifically YouTube and Amazon against your work. Like I saw some crackers commenting on your stuff on YouTube, and then you had posted a couple comments from some, even some black people on Amazon talking about, well, you know, I can't believe that you do this. It's disgusting, and I thought that I was going to get a children's book and stuff like that. So there's a couple of people that do oppose your work, and I think it's basically surrounding Sankofa Superheroes 1 and 2, and maybe even Insurrection, I'm not sure. But can you tell them why these people are trying to oppose your work and, you know, what you think about it?
Sure, sure. I say the biggest controversy that I've had was with Sankofa Superheroes 1, which I was surprised because Insurrection I thought might be controversial. I don't think people have caught on to that yet, and they definitely haven't caught on to Sankofa 2 because, in my opinion, Sankofa 2 is probably worse than 1 because by the time 2 came around, we weren't asking anymore, can we do this or can we do that? We were just like, well,
right,
we're doing it. So it just is what it is. Yeah, Mark Essex on the cover. We're going to do it. So
right.
That all happened. You know, crackers will be crackers. They're very nosy. And some cracker went to Amazon, purchased my book, didn't expect what he got, and started an international controversy. South Africans was going crazy. White people in America was going crazy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
they saw
They saw Nat Turner's picture in my book where he has an axe over his head. He's about to chop up some slave owners, and they thought that I was inciting children to be violent, or because they're having a problem with that over in Africa, in South Africa, I think they're actually doing that. So instead of being intelligent and reading it and seeing that this is a historical story, they thought that I was telling like everybody go chop up some crackers.
Right.
So yeah. So that's what started the whole controversy. And yes, there's some Negroes that jumped on the bandwagon. It is what it is. Not everybody is made for that. And that's what I try to tell people. I have a rating system for my books. The green books are very mild. They're good for anybody. The yellow books are usually have some kind of racial undertone. You may want to be careful when you buy that book. It's not for everybody. The red books definitely are not for everybody. You start off with the green and work your way up, but people don't seem to get that. So we have Negroes who just jump in and see a cute cover, buy a red book, and then they're like, oh, I don't like this. But the problem with that is, these are usually the same irresponsible parents who will let their children listen to hip-hop. They'll let them watch videos.
Right.
Let them watch the news with, like, gory violence and overt sexuality and all this kind of stuff in it. But when you talk about black-on-white violence, which is usually in self-defense, that becomes a problem. That makes you uncomfortable because you're not used to seeing that violence. It's okay if it's a black person dying, or if it's a, you know, black on black or white on black. But when you get on that black on white, when we're standing up for ourselves and we're not being pacifists, it's a big problem.
Right, and that's considered hatred. And might I add to your list of stuff that irresponsible parents let their children do, the video game industry is a billion-dollar industry. And it's not made off of Mario Brothers. It's made off of violent online, you know, games where you're shooting people, you're sniping them and stuff like that. So that's okay, you know what I'm saying? That's just fine. But what's not fine is what you have, and that's I don't know. I do agree with you there where there's, you know, you would say that this is too violent, but at the same time, let your children play video games as well as listen to all of the crazy, filthy rap music. I mean, we thought our music, our parents thought our music was filthy when we grew up, but the stuff that they got out there now, it's just ridiculous. So I guess you answered the second question, because I was going to ask you, I do want to ask you this. See, there's a big debate in the nation-building nationalist community, and the debate is not necessarily it's not necessarily one of those debates where people are just trying to bang on each other, but a lot of people are against the militant aspect of the community. They say, you know, all these brothers and sisters do is talk about killing people and killing crackers, this, that, and the next thing. And I always say this. I say that the militant part of the community has its place. And the reason being is this. I just think, like, okay, I'll just give one example, and then I want to get your thoughts on it. I remember when Trayvon Martin got killed by George Zimmerman. And a member of the Black Panther Party down there, I think it was in Florida, had put a bounty on George Zimmerman's head. My dad told me. Because every last bit of revolutionary threat in my body comes from my dad. And he called me up and he said, did you see that they put a bounty on George Zimmerman's head? I said, yes, I don't even really know how to think about this, Dad. He said, what do you mean you don't know how to think about it? It's fantastic. I said, what's fantastic about it? He said, listen, son, they need to know that this could happen to them. And I started thinking about that. I really did. And I said, you're right. They do need to know that this could happen to them, because if they don't know that there's a possibility of this happening to them, I mean, they're going to be killing us indiscriminately. And what do you know what I'm saying? So I guess what I'm asking you is, what is your take on that?
My take on it is that you cannot appeal, and I know I'm not the first to say this, you cannot try to appeal to the moral conscience of people who have no morals. There's no love in their heart for you. And so all the begging and marching and whatnot is not going to do any good. The only thing that they respect is a people who will stand up and are willing to do to them what has been done to us. That's the only thing that they respect. As a matter of fact, in my new book, Lessons for the Asafo, I have that. I have a picture of a brother with his hands up, and under it it says something like, death is preferable to disgrace. I don't have the exact proverb in front of me, but that's disgraceful for you to be in that kind of submissive position, especially as a black man, to walk around with your hands up and this is your way of protest or making a difference. It's a better way to handle that. I'm not going to tell nobody what to do, but I'm going to just say it's a better way to handle that without disgracing yourself.
No doubt. No doubt, sister. I agree 1,000%. So, okay, so let me ask you this. You have your rating system from the red all the way down to the green. And what do you think? Do you think that – let me ask the question correctly. How do you think your red books help children, or help us, starting from the children, address that particular need to deal with that aspect of us being black people living in the planet? Because I won't even say America. We're dealing with this all over this planet. How do you think those books, or your children's books, help this particular aspect of – help this need for us to address?
Those books are some of the most effective in giving our children dignity, race pride, and balance. Because because we're not intelligent enough or not dedicated enough or just haven't found a way, some of us are trying to figure out how to do it, but we haven't taken our children out of the devil's school. So they're getting inundated every day. Black History Month's about to come up. Who are they going to be hearing about? They're going to hear about Martin Luther King and all these people. I have a nightmare. Yeah. Let's hold hands, little black boys and white girls, and get in here and do whatever. That's what they're going to be hearing about. And that's what they're raised on. So they're coming up. They don't want a black boy doesn't want a black girl. A black girl doesn't want a black boy anymore. They're confused. They're turning into homosexuals, all kinds of stuff. Those red books will balance that. Those red books let them know that you're not crazy. It's okay to want to stand up for yourself. You know, what does it do to a black boy in school, or even a black girl, because I went through it, in school, when Black History Month comes around and you're hearing your people were enslaved, they never fought back, They were just whipped and degraded and, you know, taken away. Your men were not men. They couldn't protect you. What does that do to the mind of a black boy and a black girl? You never gave in.
Right.
There was always a segment of the population who was trying to get free, doing everything they could, and giving the crack of hell. We didn't just always lose. That's another thing. Like, when you did try to rebel, you lost. We didn't always lose. I celebrate the victories, and we had a lot of victories. What does that do to balance what he's learning in school or what she's learning in school when she's thinking, my daddy can't even protect me? Or if I get with a black man when I get older, he won't be able to protect me. Maybe I should go get with this cracker.
Mm-hmm.
And because a lot of them think that, we might not think it starts at that age, but it does. It's that ripping away of manhood and dignity. So my books really help balance that and let them be proud of being black and not feel like they have to be a doormat and submit, because we're doing too much submitting right now.
That was an excellent answer, sis. I mean, that was an excellent answer. You are very articulate, and I really appreciate you coming on the show and blessing us with your words. I do have another question to ask you, and that is, how do you think that how can people who are just like you attempting to either write books, give lectures, things like that? Because we all are human, and some of us are affected by people who may have opposition to what we're trying to do, even though we have in our heart defending black people, raising black people's consciousness. Some of us come in a sharper edge than others. But how do you stave off these attacks by people who either don't understand or just straight coons and don't want to understand? How do you think that we should stave off these kind of attacks?
For me, I just confront it head on. Well, some of them I ignore, because some people you have to realize are not worth your attention. If they're a coon and they want to stay coon, let them be that. I'm, like I said, my book's not for everybody. I'm not going to go to a coon and try to say, oh, please read my book. No, it's not for you. That's fine. Look, I don't want your nasty review on Amazon. Don't even read it. That's fine. Don't waste your money or my time. But, you know, for the people that really want to learn, you know, try to teach them, do what you can, but always be confident in yourself and your position. Don't worry so much about what other people say. You know, I've lost friends and associates and all that, but like I said, that was meant to be. You just have to stick to what you know. If you know that there's a difference that you can make in your community, you have to do it, and know that your harshest critic, the people that beat you down the most, 9 times out of 10, are going to be from that community. It is what it is. Don't focus on them. Focus on the people who are with you, and don't give up.
Right. Gotcha. Okay, sis, is there any last thing that you want to say to our audience?
Oh, goodness. I would just like to say, you know, there's so much. Basically, we have to pay attention to our children. We cannot continue to have children and then treat them like they're houseplants. You know, just give them a little water, put them in the sun, and they'll grow, and that's it. You actually have to put effort into them. You have to teach them. There's so many people in the conscious community who you look at their children and you would never know they were conscious. They don't know anything.
Right.
You know, they're behind. It's ridiculous. Children are not pets. They're not houseplants. You have to develop them from a very early age and be willing to spend money on them and spend time with them. You can't always be at this lecture and neglect your home. Bring your child with you so that they can get that knowledge too. Because if we don't put these things into our children, they're going to be starting over from scratch, and then we lose a generation time after time. We have to build on what we have. Build that in your children so that they can be better than you.
Got you. Sister, I thank you for your time and your attention. I thank you so much for coming on our show and giving us these few words. Much love and success to you, and hopefully we can have you back on in the future.
Thank you so much.
All right. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam.